This is Audible.
McGraw-Hill Professional presents Crypto Assets, the Innovative Investor's Guide to Bitcoin and Beyond. Written by Chris Berniski and Jack Tater. Narrated by Dave Clark. Author's Note. When we started writing this book in December 2016, Bitcoin was in the $700, Ether was in the $7, and the aggregate network value of crypto assets was just north of $10 billion. Over the ensuing months of writing, we watched Bitcoin push past $4,000, while Ether crossed $400, and the aggregate network value of crypto assets punched through $100 billion. Crypto assets went from being esoteric dark web material to mainstream topics of conversation and enthusiasm. When embarking on our literary journey, we recognized the difficulty in documenting arguably the world's fastest-moving markets. These markets can change as much in a day, up or down, as the stock market changes in a year. Nonetheless, we were continually asked the same question. What should I read to get the full picture of what's going on in these markets? The frequency of this question grew to a clamor as the markets rose through the first half of 2017. And yet information channels remained stubbornly fragmented among Reddit, Twitter, Telegram, Slack, Medium, news sites, and more. While we recognize the difficulty in covering the full picture of the ever-moving crypto asset markets, we believe that this book provides a comprehensive view of the history, technology, and marketplace dynamics of Bitcoin and beyond. We have crafted the book to be as evergreen as possible with regard to the background and methodologies laid forth, so that even as the markets change, the book retains its value. We recognize that by the time you read this, some asset prices may seem like the distant past, and some teams may be indignant that we didn't cover their story. We couldn't possibly have covered every price change and every story, or we would never have published the book. Our hope is to serve as a starting point and means to understanding, so that we can all study and experience this space together. It is a history that is still in its earliest stages of being written. Foreword. When I first learned about Bitcoin, I was convinced it would fail. Based on a few articles and 2 decades of experience as a skeptical trader, I loudly, and now regrettably, declared on CNBC's Fast Money that Bitcoin would not survive. How could it? It was not backed by any entity. It did not have a central bank. It was not accepted for taxes. And it did not have an army to enforce its use. What's more, it was extremely volatile and had a bad reputation, all of which would contribute surely to its premature demise. I have never been more incorrect in my entire career. Somewhere in the CNBC archives exists an awkward video of me railing against this magic internet money. If you're reading this and have access to the video, treat it with the respect it deserves and destroy it. Since those unenlightened days, I have come to understand that Bitcoin and the blockchain beneath it is a technological advancement that has the potential to revolutionize financial services the same way email did to the post office. Once I realized that blockchain technology was a disruptive force, I sought out people who shared my view. I met Chris Berniski at the very first Wall Street Blockchain Alliance holiday party, and we immediately found common interest in the potential for blockchain-based assets, or crypto assets, to become a new asset class for investors. At the time, very few people saw Bitcoin's potential, but Chris did, and it was clear to me that he possessed rare leadership and vision. Jack Tater is an expert in retirement planning who has spent over 2 decades in the financial industry and brings a much-needed perspective of finance and investment knowledge to the crypto asset world. New technology can be confusing and intimidating, but through his engaging writing, Jack possesses the unique ability to distill a complex subject into an easily digestible serving. As a result of their combined perspectives, Crypto Assets is a book that will satisfy the most curious minds and engage those approaching the subject for the first time. Readers will benefit not only from Chris and Jack's vision, but also their deep knowledge of the topic. As the manager of a hedge fund that invests in digital assets, I am constantly researching this asset class's investment potential, and when I get stumped, my first call is to Chris Berniske. While I am thrilled that Chris is sharing his unique insights in this book, I am selfishly reluctant to lose my secret go-to resource. Layer on Jack's experience as one of the first financial journalists to write about Bitcoin, and you have a powerful combination. Let them be your resource as well. The beauty of this book is that it takes the reader on a journey from Bitcoin's inception in the ashes of the great financial crisis to its role as a diversifier in a traditional investment portfolio. Those who want to look under the hood of blockchain technology will be thrilled with the skillful description of the elegant architecture that powers this technology. And financial historians, like myself, will find the discussion of investment bubbles instructive. Chris and Jack artfully apply financial history lessons to the crypto asset investment world. Spoiler alert! Even though blockchain technology is disrupting traditional financial market structures, fear and greed remain uniquely human traits that can and will find a place in crypto assets. Thankfully, Chris and Jack give readers the tools and knowledge to know what to look out for when bubbles do occur. Armed with this knowledge, the reader can then use the valuation framework laid out in chapters 12 and 13 to find the most promising crypto assets. Valuing crypto assets is done unlike traditional investments. They typically do not have revenue or cash flows, and thus present a conundrum for those evaluating their merits. Here, Chris and Jack present groundbreaking work on how to properly value an asset based on the network effect and teams of decentralized developers. Everyone who is even thinking about investing in crypto assets needs to read these chapters. One of the most fascinating outcomes of the blockchain revolution is how crypto assets are disrupting the disruptors. As Chris and Jack explain, the venture capital business model is being turned on its head by crowdfunding efforts that include initial crypto asset offerings, or ICOs. Crypto assets are made of code, and because they easily track and convey ownership, they can be used as fundraising tools for startups. In the last 2 years, there has been a wave of entrepreneurs that bypassed venture capitalists and instead chose to raise startup capital via these methods. As with any new model, there are questions about legality and sustainability. But the Silicon Valley ethos of break things first, then ask for forgiveness, has found its way to Wall Street. Professionals who are involved in all aspects of fundraising, from venture capital to capital markets, will find the discussion of these new methods of raising capital riveting, maybe even a little frightening. The final chapter of my book, The Bitcoin Big Bang, was titled Everything You Know About Business Is Wrong, and it previews what Chris and Jack have identified as a game-changing development in the way capital is raised and distributed. Self-funded, decentralized organizations are a new species in the global economy that are changing everything we know about business. A crypto asset as the fuel for a decentralized organization not only changes the organizational chart, it also rearranges incentive structures. These new organizations are altering the way software is developed. Crypto assets have inverted the value creation structure that worked so well during the development of the Internet. These so-called fat protocols are self-funding development platforms that create and gain value as applications are built on top. This is an entirely new paradigm for open-source projects that incentivizes developers to build socially useful projects. When I started working on Wall Street, the Internet was something on a computer at the end of the trading desk. Amazon, eBay, and Google did not exist. But within 5 years, these companies had changed the world. As a greenhorn trader, I was too young and inexperienced to recognize that the Internet was a once-in-a-generation investment opportunity. I was convinced that I would not see another exponential investment opportunity for the rest of my career, until I discovered blockchain technology. Blockchain technology is one of the most important innovations in the history of finance. It is changing the way we transact, distribute capital, and organize our companies. If you're like me and missed investing in the Internet, read this book so you can take advantage of the biggest investment opportunity since the Internet. Brian Kelly, CNBC contributor and manager of the BKCM Digital Asset Fund. Introduction. Books, TV shows, and movies have been making futuristic predictions for decades, many of which were originally considered absurd. Star Trek featured several that proved to be not so outlandish. The indispensable handheld communicators have become today's smartphones. The personal access display device is now our tablet, and a universal translator exists, of which there are several apps to choose. Edward Bellamy's enigmatically titled 1887 book, Looking Backward, predicted debit and credit cards, and 2001, A Space Odyssey, imagined forms of social media, though nothing on the scale that we currently have. Alvin Toffler's Future Shock gripped readers in the 1970s as it predicted the exponential change destined to shake our society, and issued a warning. In the three short decades between now and the 21st century, millions of ordinary, psychologically normal people will face an abrupt collision with the future. This future would create the shattering stress and disorientation that we induce in individuals by subjecting them to too much change in too short a time. Exponential change has now become a buzzword, but the power of an exponential curve is rarely considered. Each year will entail greater change than the year before. Such a concept differs drastically from a linear rate of change, where the future will change just as quickly as the past did. The two may appear similar in the early days of change, but when the exponential curve starts to inflect it quickly, and at times violently, it distinguishes itself. We often operate with the rough assumption that the rate of change over the next year or two will be roughly equal to that over the prior years, which is a linear worldview. That works for the early stage of change, but not when the exponential curve starts to bend like a hockey stick. Unfortunately, most investment portfolios are being managed with a linear worldview, with indices that are pegged to the past guiding our future investments. Nothing could be more short-sighted or potentially dangerous in a time of exponential change. The Internet has irrevocably changed the world, and it continues to do so as developers build on the platform of connection it creates. Thus far, the World Wide Web has been the greatest meta-application to leverage the underlying fiber of the Internet. The indexed web contains at least 4.73 billion pages, nearing the point where there will be one page for every human. The beginning of the Internet is commonly associated with the 1990s, with Tim Berners-Lee stumbling upon the idea of the World Wide Web while trying to create an information management system for CERN, and Mark Andreessen developing the first widely used web browser, which ultimately became Netscape. Although the accomplishments of Berners-Lee and Andreessen were linchpins to mainstream adoption, the web and the ability to browse it were the first killer apps built on top of the Internet, not to be conflated with the creation of the Internet itself. We are likely still in the early stages of leveraging the potential of the Internet and building meta-applications atop it. The Internet was first conceptualized in the early 1960s to create resilient communication systems that would survive a nuclear attack on the United States. According to one of the Internet's progenitors, Paul Barron, the key to accomplishing such resilience was decentralization. J.C.R. Licklider proselytized the concept of an intergalactic computer network, convincing his colleagues at DARPA, which is responsible for investigating and developing new technologies for the U.S. military, of its importance. Leonard Kleinrock, an MIT professor, was doing work on packet switching, the technology underpinning the Internet, that would lead to the first book on the subject, Communication Nets. Ironically, though they were all working on a means to connecting the world, many of the early researchers in this period were unaware of one another. But their dream has been realized. Every day, more than 3.5 billion Google search queries are made. 18.7 billion text messages are sent. That doesn't even include WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger, which combine for more than 60 billion messages per day. And 269 billion emails are sent. Interestingly, however, the Internet has become increasingly centralized over time, potentially endangering its original conception as a highly survivable system. Human ingenuity often surfaces when it's most needed, and now a new technology is emerging that returns to the decentralized ethos of the original Internet, with the potential to revolutionize our computational and transactional infrastructure, blockchain technology. Every second, millions of packets of information are transacted between humans and machines using the Internet. And blockchain technology is forcing us to rethink the costs, security, and ownership of these transactions. Blockchain technology came from Bitcoin. In other words, Bitcoin is the mother of blockchain technology. Bitcoin, with a capital B, is a platform that carries upon it programmable money, known as Bitcoin with a lowercase b. The technological foundation to this platform is a distributed and digital ledger referred to as a blockchain. In January 2009, when Bitcoin was first released, it embodied the first working implementation of a blockchain the world had seen. Since then, people have downloaded the open-source software that is Bitcoin, studied its blockchain, and released different blockchains that go far beyond Bitcoin. Blockchain technology can now be thought of as a general-purpose technology, on par with that of the steam engine, electricity, and machine learning. To quote a May 2016 article in Harvard Business Review by Don and Alex Tapscott, "The technology most likely to change the next decade of business is not the social web, big data, the cloud, robotics, or even artificial intelligence. It's the blockchain, the technology behind digital currencies like Bitcoin. Incumbents are sensing the inherent creative destruction, especially within the financial services sector, understanding that winners will grow new markets and feast off the disintermediated. Many startups are eyeing these middlemen with the oft-flickering thought that has been credited to Amazon's Jeff Bezos. Your fat margins are my opportunity." If financial incumbents don't embrace the technology themselves, Bitcoin and blockchain technology could do to banks what cell phones did to telephone poles. Nearly every global bank, exchange, custodian, and financial services provider is part of some blockchain consortium, investing in the potential disruptors or internally building its own team. These players include J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Citibank, the New York Stock Exchange, NASDAQ, Banco Santander, Barclays, UBS, South African Reserve Bank, Bank of Tokyo Mitsubishi, Mizuho, China Merchants Bank, Australian Stock Exchange, and more. Financial incumbents are aware blockchain technology puts on the horizon a world without cash. No need for loose bills, brick-and-mortar banks, or potentially centralized monetary policies. Instead, value is handled virtually, through a system that has no central authority figure and is governed in a decentralized and democratic manner. Mathematics force order in the operations. Our life savings and that of our heirs could be entirely intangible, floating in a soup of secure ones and zeros, the entire system accessed through computers and smartphones. Technology providers smell the disruption as well, with Microsoft and IBM most vocally leading the charge. Microsoft provides blockchain as a service for developers within its Azure cloud platform. Marley Gray, its director of technology strategy, has said, "We want, and frankly our customers want, access to every blockchain. It could be two guys in a garage that forked Bitcoin and had this genius idea, and people want to try that out. We don't want to have any barriers. We're open to all. We help even the smallest players on board. Just as the Internet and World Wide Web changed how we live our lives and interact with others, it also made millionaires out of the innovators who began companies based on these technologies, and the investors who invested in them. Those with the foresight to have bought Google during its initial public offering, IPO, would have seen a 1,800% appreciation by August 2016. And those who bought Amazon's IPO would have seen a 1,827% appreciation. Blockchain architectures and their native assets are well on their way to becoming the next great meta application to leverage Internet infrastructure. They already provide services that include global currencies, world computers, and decentralized social networks, among hundreds of others. The native assets historically have been called cryptocurrencies or altcoins, but we prefer the term crypto assets, which is the term we will use throughout the book. The terms cryptocurrencies and altcoins convey only a fraction of the innovation that is occurring in the crypto asset economy. Not all of the 800 existing crypto assets are currencies. We are not just witnessing the decentralized creation of currencies, but also of commodities and polished digital goods and services, as blockchains meld technology and the markets to build Web 3.0. It's early enough in the life of blockchain technology that no books yet have focused solely on public blockchains and their native crypto assets from the investing perspective. We are changing that because investors need to be aware of the opportunity and armed both to take advantage and protect themselves in the fray. Inevitably, innovations of such magnitude, fueled by the mania of making money, can lead to overly optimistic investors. Investors who early on saw potential in Internet stocks encountered the devastating dot-com bubble. Stock in Books A Million saw its price soar by over 1,000% in 1 week, simply by announcing it had an updated website. Subsequently, the price crashed, and the company has since delisted and gone private. Other Internet-based high flyers that ended up crashing include Pets.com, WorldCom, and Webvan. Today, none of those stocks exist. Whether specific crypto assets will survive or go the way of Books A Million remains to be seen. What's clear, however, is that some will be big winners. Altogether, between the assets native to blockchains and the companies that stand to capitalize on this creative destruction, there needs to be a game plan that investors use to analyze and ultimately profit from this new investment theme of crypto assets. The goal of this book is not to predict the future. It's changing too fast for all but the lucky to be right, but rather to prepare investors for a variety of futures. Bitcoin, the most widely known crypto asset, has been riding a roller coaster. If one had invested $100 in Bitcoin in October 2009, the first time an exchange rate was established for the nascent digital currency, one would now have over $100 million. In November 2013, if one had invested that same $100 in Bitcoin, one would have endured an 86% drop by January 2015. There are nearly 800 other stories to tell, considering there are over 800 crypto assets floating on globally connected and ever-on markets. At the end of 2016, a list of the top 50 included Bitcoin, Ethereum, Ripple, Litecoin, Monero, Ethereum Classic, Dash, MadeSafe Coin, NEM, Augur, Steam, Iconomy, Dogecoin, Factum, Waves, Stellar Lumens, Digix DAO, Zcash, Lisk, Xenix Coin, eDinar Coin, Swisscoin, Game Credits, Ardor, BitShares, Lomo Coin, Bitcoin, Emmercoin, AntShares, Golden, Gollum, Tether, Shadowcash, Zorum, StorageCoin, Stratus, Next, PeerCoin, IOCoin, RubyCoin, BitCrystals, Singular DTV, Counterparty, Agoras Tokens, SiaCoin, YBCoin, Bitcoin Dark, Syscoin, Potcoin, and Global Currency Reserve. This book will be the first of its kind to dive deep into a number of these. While many have slipped under the mainstream radar, the opportunities they present may be just as great as Bitcoin. We hope to transform today's intelligent investor into an innovative investor by providing a guide that explains what crypto assets are, why they should be considered, and how to invest in them. Written by Benjamin Graham, The Intelligent Investor is a seminal work on value investing that Warren Buffett crowned as the best book about investing ever written. While we can only hope to achieve a fraction of the success Graham had in educating investors, our goals are very similar. We have chosen to focus on an asset class that didn't exist in Graham's day, and one that serves as a nice hedge against the exponential change that increasingly will disrupt existing portfolios over time. One of the keys to Graham's book was always reminding the investor to focus on the inherent value of an investment without getting caught in the irrational behavior of the markets. Just as he aimed to arm the intelligent investor with the tools to make an investment decision based on fundamental analysis, we hope to do the same for the innovative investor who is considering adding crypto assets to his or her portfolio. This is not a get-rich-quick book with the latest hot tips. Rather, it's a book that grounds this new asset class in the context of its own history, common investment strategies, the history of financial speculation, and more. Investors who follow through on their interest in crypto assets and examine them in the context of their overall financial goals and portfolio strategies will become innovative investors. We've written this book for the novice and the expert. We've divided it into three parts: what, why, and how. The what lays the foundation for this new asset class, providing a concise explanation of the technology and history of crypto assets. The why dives into why portfolio management matters, as well as why we think this is a whole new asset class that offers great opportunity, as well as great risk. The how details how to approach adding a crypto asset to a portfolio, including a framework for investigating the merits of a new asset, and the logistical grit of acquisition, storage, taxes, and regulation. Each chapter effectively can stand alone. The world of crypto assets may at times feel like science fiction. We imagine that when the Internet was first explained and discussed, people felt the same way. For many, change sparks fear. We understand that. But it also kindles opportunity, and we hope to prepare the reader to recognize, understand, and act on the opportunities available in the world of crypto assets. Tomorrow inevitably becomes today. Exponential change isn't going away. This book will help the innovative investor not only survive, but thrive. Let's dive in. Part 1. What? Chapter 1. Bitcoin and the Financial Crisis of 2008. In 2008, Bitcoin rose like a phoenix from the ashes of near Wall Street collapse. In the 4 months of August to October 2008, an unprecedented series of changes occurred. Bitcoin.org was registered. Lehman Brothers filed for the largest bankruptcy in American history. Bank of America bought Merrill Lynch for $50 billion. The U.S. government established the $700 billion Troubled Asset Relief Program, TARP. And Satoshi Nakamoto published a paper that founded Bitcoin and the basis of blockchain technology. The entwinement of the financial collapse on the one hand and the rise of Bitcoin on the other is hard to ignore. The financial crisis cost the global economy trillions of dollars and burned bridges of trust between financial titans and the public. Meanwhile, Bitcoin provided a system of decentralized trust for value transfer, relying not on the ethics of humankind, but on the cold calculation of computers and laying the foundation potentially to obviate the need for much of Wall Street. Who is Satoshi Nakamoto? Referring to Satoshi as he is simply a matter of convenience, because to this day, no one knows exactly who or even what Satoshi is. He, she, they, or it remains totally anonymous. On a profile page Satoshi created for the P2P Foundation, which he used to communicate with others as he spun up Bitcoin, he wrote that he was a 37-year-old male living in Japan. Yet outside of Japan, fact-digging has led people to believe Satoshi resided in the United Kingdom, North America, Central America, South America, or even the Caribbean. People point to his impeccable written English or occasionally British phrases as proof of UK residence, while others cite his posting patterns as being indicative of living in geographies in Eastern or Central time zones. A number of phony Satoshis have appeared too, as the media is all too eager to present a solution to such a juicy puzzle. An Australian, Craig Wright, claimed to be Satoshi in May 2016 and momentarily grabbed the attention of publications such as The Economist and Wired before being debunked. Claims of Satoshi's origin now cover five continents, leading us back to the possibility that maybe Satoshi isn't even a single person, but rather a group of people. The mastery Satoshi showcased across a wide scope of topics, including cryptography, computer science, economics and psychology, and the ability to communicate it all fluidly, seems to support the hypothesis that Satoshi is more than one person. But who would they be? While the mystery may never be solved, Satoshi most certainly was aware of Wall Street's growing instability. The financial crisis of 2008. For financial titans, 2008 proved a slowly unfolding nightmare. In March of that year, the first major Wall Street institution, Bear Stearns, acquiesced to its demons. After weathering every type of market for 85 years, Bear Stearns was finally dragged under by a slumping housing market. On March 16th, J.P. Morgan Chase & Company bought it for $2 a share, about 1% of the value of its $170 per share price from a year prior. To catalyze the deal, the Federal Reserve agreed to facilitate the purchase of $29 billion in distressed assets from Bear Stearns. Yet, disturbingly, a month after the buyout, John Mack and Lloyd Blankfein, CEOs of Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs Group Incorporated, respectively, told shareholders the housing market crisis was going to be short-lived and nearing a close. Much of this crisis was born of irresponsible lending, known as subprime loans to Americans who couldn't repay their debts. Historically, when a bank issued a loan, the bank was on the hook for ensuring that the borrower repaid the funds. However, in the case of many subprime loans, once these loans were issued to borrowers, they were then packaged or securitized into complex instruments known as collateralized mortgage obligations, CMOs. These CMOs were then sold to other investors, effectively passing on the risk like a hot potato through the financial markets, with purchasers lured by the promise of high returns combined with low risk due to purported diversification. What people didn't realize, including Wall Street executives, was how deep and interrelated the risks CMOs posed were. Part of the problem was that CMOs were complex financial instruments supported by outdated financial architecture that blended analog and digital systems. The lack of seamless digital documentation made quantifying the risk and understanding exactly what CMOs were composed of difficult, if not impossible. Furthermore, as these CMOs were spread around the world, global investors were suddenly interconnected in a web of American mortgages. In the summer of 2008, despite the lack of financial transparency, but emboldened by access to funds from the Federal Reserve in case of further distress, Richard Fold, Jr., the CEO of Lehman Brothers, eerily claimed, "We can't fail now." As a storm brewed around unknowing Wall Street executives, Satoshi Nakamoto was busy fleshing out the concept of Bitcoin. On August 18, 2008, Bitcoin.org, the home website for information on Bitcoin, was registered. Whether as an individual or an entity, what's now clear is that Satoshi was designing a technology that, if existent, would have likely ameliorated the toxic opacity of CMOs. Due to the distributed transparency and immutable audit log of a blockchain, each loan issued and packaged into different CMOs could have been documented on a single blockchain. This would have allowed any purchaser to view a coherent record of CMO ownership and the status of each mortgage within. Unfortunately, in 2008, multiple disparate systems, which were expensive and therefore poorly reconciled, held the system together by digital strings. On the morning of Wednesday, September 10, 2008, Fold and other senior management faced a different reality from Fold's confident summer proclamation. Management struggled to explain to a group of critical analysts $5.3 billion worth of write-downs on toxic assets and a quarterly loss of $3.9 billion. The call ended abruptly, and analysts signed off unconvinced of the measures Lehman was taking. The markets had already punished Lehman the day before, dropping its stock price 45%, and on Wednesday, it dropped another 7%. 2 days later, on Friday afternoon, the CEOs of Merrill Lynch, Morgan Stanley, and Goldman Sachs met at the New York Federal Reserve, along with the Federal Reserve Chairman, the U.S. Treasury Secretary, and the President of the New York Federal Reserve. The afternoon's topic was what to do about Lehman Brothers. It was clear the situation had become critical. Initially, it appeared either Barclays or Bank of America would come to the rescue of Lehman Brothers, but that likelihood quickly evaporated. On Saturday, as the same group met again at the New York Fed, John Thain, Merrill Lynch's CEO, had an unsettling thought. During the briefing on Lehman's situation, he realized his company might only be a few steps from the same catastrophe. "This could be me sitting here next Friday," he said. Thain quickly moved to find suitors for Merrill, the most promising option being Bank of America, which had already been in talks to buy Lehman. With talks secretly progressing between Merrill Lynch and Bank of America, Lehman Brothers held Barclays as its only suitor hope. By Sunday, September 14th, Barclays was ready to approve a deal to buy Lehman Brothers. Lehman only needed the U.S. or British government to back its trading balances for a couple of days, enough time for Barclays to conduct a shareholder vote for final approval. Neither government was willing to step in, and the likelihood of a deal began to melt. With only a few hours left until Asian markets opened for trading, the U.S. government questioned Lehman on its only remaining option, bankruptcy. Harvey Miller, a well-regarded bankruptcy lawyer at Weil, Gotshal & Manges, had been working quietly since Thursday night to lay the groundwork for this worst-case bankruptcy scenario. When asked by a senior Fed official if Mr. Miller felt Lehman was ready to file for bankruptcy, he responded, "This will cause financial Armageddon." If Lehman filed for bankruptcy, financial firms that did business with Lehman would also lose billions, potentially triggering a domino effect of bankruptcy. Later that evening, Bank of America inked a deal to buy Merrill Lynch for $50 billion. And a couple of hours later, in the early hours of Monday morning, Lehman Brothers filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection, making it the biggest bankruptcy in U.S. history. So came to an end a 164-year-old firm, born from a dry goods store that had evolved into the fourth largest U.S. investment bank. It signaled the end of an era. Lehman's bankruptcy and Merrill's buyout proved to be only the beginning. On Tuesday, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York was authorized to lend up to $85 billion to the American International Group, AIG, the biggest insurer in America, as the behemoth organization began to teeter. It was mid-September, and darker clouds loomed on the horizon for Wall Street and global financial markets. The birth of Bitcoin. 6.5 weeks later, on October 31, 2008, Satoshi released the Bitcoin white paper, which serves as the genesis for every single blockchain implementation deployed today and forevermore. In the concluding paragraph of his foundational paper, Satoshi wrote, "We have proposed a system for electronic transactions without relying on trust." By the time he released the paper, he had already coded the entire system. In his own words, "I had to write all the code before I could convince myself that I could solve every problem. Then I wrote the paper." Based on historical estimates, Satoshi likely started formalizing the Bitcoin concept sometime in late 2006 and started coding it around May 2007. In the same time span, many regulators began to believe that the U.S. housing market was overextended and likely in for a rough ride. It's hard to believe someone with such breadth of knowledge as Satoshi would be working in isolation from what he was witnessing in global financial markets. The day after publishing his white paper, Satoshi sent an email to the cryptography mailing list with a link to his paper. The list was composed of subscribers focused on cryptography and its potential applications. Satoshi's email sparked a chain of responses. On Friday, November 7th, 2008, in reply to his increasingly passionate group of followers, he wrote, "You will not find a solution to political problems in cryptography. But we can win a major battle in the arms race and gain a new territory of freedom for several years. Governments are good at cutting off the heads of centrally controlled networks like Napster. But pure P2P networks like Nutella and Tor seem to be holding their own." It's clear from this quote that Satoshi was not creating Bitcoin to slip seamlessly into the existing governmental and financial system, but instead to be an alternative system free of top-down control, governed by the decentralized masses. Such decentralized autonomy was foundational to the early days of the Internet as well, where each node on the network was an autonomous agent that corresponded with other agents through shared protocols. On November 9th, the Bitcoin project was registered on SourceForge.net, a website geared toward facilitating open-source software development. In response to a growing number of inquiries and interest on the cryptography mailing list, Satoshi wrote on November 17th, "I'll try and hurry up and release the source code as soon as possible to serve as a reference to help clear up all these implementation questions." Then, Satoshi went quiet for a couple months as Wall Street continued to crumble. The Emergency Economic Stabilization Act of 2008 had done little to ameliorate the meltdown that ensued after Lehman's bankruptcy. Passed by Congress and signed by President George W. Bush on October 3rd, the Emergency Act had established the $700 billion TARP. As a result of TARP, the U.S. government acquired preferred stock in hundreds of banks, as well as massive companies such as AIG, General Motors, and Chrysler. The stock didn't come for free, though. It took $550 billion in investments to stabilize those teetering mammoths. In the opening moments of Bitcoin's life as a public network, Satoshi made clear he was attuned to the failings of the global financial system. In the first instance of recording information on Bitcoin's blockchain, Satoshi inscribed, "The Times, 3rd January 2009, Chancellor on brink of second bailout of banks," in reference to an article that appeared in the British publication The Times on the UK's likely need to assist more banks in staying afloat. Many years later, people would realize that one of the most powerful use cases of blockchain technology was to inscribe immutable and transparent information that could never be wiped from the face of digital history, and that was free for all to see. Satoshi's choice first to employ this functionality by inscribing a note about bank bailouts made it clear he was keen on never letting us forget the failings of the 2008 financial crisis. An alternative financial system. 9 days after this poignant inscription, the first-ever transaction using Bitcoin took place between Satoshi Nakamoto and Hal Finney, an early advocate and Bitcoin developer. 9 months later, the first exchange rate would be set for Bitcoin, valuing it at 0.08 of a cent per coin, or 1,309 Bitcoin to the dollar. A dollar invested then would be worth over $1 million by the start of 2017, underscoring the viral growth that the innovation was poised to enjoy. Diving deeper into Satoshi's writings around the time, it becomes more apparent that he was fixated on providing an alternative financial system, if not a replacement entirely. After the network had been up and running for over a month, Satoshi wrote of Bitcoin, "It's completely decentralized, with no central server or trusted parties, because everything is based on crypto proof instead of trust. I think this is the first time we're trying a decentralized, non-trust-based system." On December 5, 2010, Satoshi showed an unnervingly human side, pleading that WikiLeaks not accept Bitcoin as a means of payment after major credit card networks had blocked users from supporting the site. Satoshi wrote, "No, don't bring it on. The project needs to grow gradually so the software can be strengthened along the way. I make this appeal to WikiLeaks not to try to use Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a small beta community in its infancy. You would not stand to get more than pocket change, and the heat you would bring would likely destroy us at this stage." Shortly thereafter, Satoshi vanished. Some speculate it was for the good of Bitcoin. After all, being the creator of a technology that has the potential to replace much of the current financial system is bound eventually to invoke the wrath of powerful government and private sector forces. By disappearing into the ether, Satoshi removed the head of Bitcoin, and with it, a single point of failure. In his wake stands a network with thousands of access points and millions of users. Wall Street, on the other hand, suffered from many points of failure. When the dust settled, the U.S. government had spent well beyond the $700 billion initially secured for TARP. In all, $2.5 trillion was injected into the system, not to mention $12.2 trillion committed to reinstall faith in the fidelity of financial institutions. While Wall Street, as we knew it, was experiencing an expensive death, Bitcoin's birth cost the world nothing. It was born as an open-source technology and quickly abandoned like a motherless babe in the world. Perhaps if the global financial system had been healthier, there would have been less of a community to support Bitcoin, which ultimately allowed it to grow into the robust and cantankerous toddler that it currently is. Welcome to the world that Bitcoin created. Since Satoshi disappeared, Bitcoin has unleashed a tidal wave of disruption and rethinking of global financial and technological systems. Countless derivations of Bitcoin have been created. Systems such as Ethereum, Litecoin, Monero, and Zcash, all of which rely on blockchain technology, Satoshi's gift to the world. At the same time, many financial and technological incumbents have moved to embrace the technology, creating confusion around all the innovation unfolding and what is most relevant to the innovative investor. The next chapter will involve solidifying understanding of blockchain technology. Bitcoin with an uppercase B, Bitcoin with a lowercase B, crypto assets, and where the investment opportunities await. Chapter 2: The Basics of Bitcoin and Blockchain Technology. It's time to crystallize the difference between Bitcoin, Bitcoin's blockchain, Bitcoin with a lowercase b, blockchain technology, and other related but distinct concepts. At first blush, this space appears jargon-heavy, deterring many from even attempting to understand it. In reality, there are only a few foreign concepts encapsulated in recently invented words, which unfortunately keep people out. Since these words are used frequently when people talk about different applications of Bitcoin or blockchain technology, the space appears impenetrable. But it's not. All that's required is a concerted effort to nail down the key concepts, which then become the mental scaffolding that will support understanding of the many applications of blockchain technology. Bitcoin with an uppercase B refers to the software that facilitates the transfer and custody of Bitcoin, the currency, which starts with a lowercase b. Bitcoin with an uppercase B equals software. Bitcoin with a lowercase b equals currency. Much of this book will use Bitcoin with a capital B as the starting point. Bitcoin is the genesis of the blockchain movement. It is common to compare newly created blockchains with Bitcoin's because Bitcoin's blockchain is the longest standing point of reference. Therefore, understanding the basics of Bitcoin is critical. However, to truly understand Bitcoin, one has to move beyond thinking of it as some digital Ponzi scheme or shadowy system used by criminals. Those are stale stories that continue to tumble through the media mill. In July 2016, researchers from the London School of Economics and Political Science, Deutsche Bundesbank, Germany's central bank, and the University of Wisconsin at Madison released the paper, The Evolution of the Bitcoin Economy. Three reputable institutions would not waste their time, nor jeopardize their reputations on a nefarious currency with no growth potential. In that paper, the researchers describe an extensive analysis they performed on Bitcoin's blockchain and the transactions therein. Below is a summary of what they found. In this paper, we gather together the minimum units of Bitcoin identity, the individual addresses, and group them into approximations of business entities, what we call superclusters. While these clusters can remain largely anonymous, we are able to ascribe many of them to particular business categories by analyzing some of their specific transaction patterns, as observed during the period from 2009 to 2015. We are then able to extract and create a map of the network of payment relationships among them and analyze transaction behavior found in each business category. We conclude by identifying three marked regimes that have evolved as the Bitcoin economy has grown and matured, from an early prototype stage to a second growth stage populated in large part with sin enterprise, i.e. gambling, black markets, to a third stage marked by a sharp progression away from sin and toward legitimate enterprises. Certainly, some of the earliest adopters of Bitcoin were criminals. But the same goes for most revolutionary technologies, as new technologies are often useful tools for those looking to outwit the law. We'll get into the specific risks associated with crypto assets, including Bitcoin, in a later chapter. But it's clear that the story of Bitcoin as a currency has evolved beyond being solely a means of payment for illegal goods and services. Over 100 media articles have jumped at the opportunity to declare Bitcoin dead, and each time they have been proven wrong. When one considers Bitcoin neutrally in the context of a broader theme of technological evolution, it sits in the sweet spot of key technology trends. For example, the world is increasingly real-time, with people connecting in peer-to-peer manners, empowering and connecting individuals, regardless of geographic or socioeconomic birth. Bitcoin fits these thematic molds. It allows a global transaction to be settled in an hour, as opposed to a couple of days. It operates in a peer-to-peer manner, the same movement that has driven Uber, Airbnb, and LendingClub to be multi-billion dollar companies in their own realms. Bitcoin lets anyone be their own bank, putting control in the hands of a grassroots movement and empowering the globally unbanked. However, Bitcoin has done something arguably more impressive than Uber, Airbnb, and LendingClub. Those companies decentralized services that were easily understandable and had precedent for being peer-to-peer. Everyone has had a friend drive them to the airport or stayed with a relative in another country or borrowed money from their parents. Decentralizing a currency without a top-down authority requires coordinated global acceptance of a shared means of payment and store of value. Currency originally came about to facilitate trade, allowing society to move past barter and the double coincidence of wants. It has evolved over time to be more convenient, resulting in its present paper state. Inherently, that paper has little value other than the fact that everyone else thinks it has value, and the government requires it be accepted to fulfill financial obligations. In that sense, it is a usefully shared representation of value. The libertarians in the room would say it's a usefully shared illusion of value, going back to the idea the paper itself is worth little. Bitcoin is a similarly shared representation of value, except it has no physical manifestation and no top-down authority to protect it. Despite these hurdles, the elegance of the mathematics that allow it to function has also allowed it to grow and store billions in value. The inner workings of Bitcoin's blockchain. Part of the Bitcoin software involves the building of Bitcoin's blockchain, which can be thought of as a digital ledger that keeps track of user balances via debits and credits. In this sense, Bitcoin's blockchain is a database that records the flow of its native currency, Bitcoin. What makes this digital ledger special? Bitcoin's blockchain is a distributed cryptographic and immutable database that uses proof of work to keep the ecosystem in sync. Technobabble? Sure. But impenetrable technobabble? No. Distributed. Distributed refers to the way in which computers access and maintain Bitcoin's blockchain. Unlike most databases that rigidly control who can access the information within, any computer in the world can access Bitcoin's blockchain. This feature of Bitcoin's blockchain is integral to Bitcoin as a global currency. Since anyone anywhere can tap into Bitcoin's blockchain to see the record of debits and credits between different accounts, it creates a system of global trust. Everything is transparent, so everyone is on a level playing field. What is cryptography? Initially a scary word, cryptography is the science of secure communication. It involves taking information and scrambling it in such a way that only the intended recipient can understand and use that information for its intended purpose. The process of scrambling the message is encryption, and unscrambling it is decryption, performed through complex mathematical techniques. Cryptography is the battlefield on which those trying to transmit information securely combat those attempting to decrypt or manipulate the information. More recently, cryptography has evolved to include applications like proving the ownership of information to a broader set of actors, such as public key cryptography, which is a large part of how cryptography is used within Bitcoin. Encryption techniques have been employed for centuries. Julius Caesar used a simple method of encryption during times of war to inform his generals of his plans. He would send messages using letters that were three letters after the letter they were supposed to represent. For instance, instead of using the letters ABC in his message, he would write them as DEF, and his generals would decrypt them to understand his intended message. Understandably, this form of encryption did not remain secure for long. A more recent example that was the subject of the movie The Imitation Game was the effort during World War II of a group of English cryptographers to decode the messages of Nazi Germany, which were encrypted by a coding device called the Enigma machine. Alan Turing, a luminary in machine learning and artificial intelligence, was a major player on the team whose efforts to break the Enigma code ultimately had a debilitating impact on German war strategies and helped to end the war. Cryptography has become a vital part of our lives. Every time we type in a password, pay with a credit card, or use WhatsApp, we are enjoying the benefits of cryptography. Without cryptography, it would be easy for bad actors to steal sensitive information and use it against us. Cryptography makes sure the information can only be used by those for whom it is intended. Cryptographic. Every transaction recorded in Bitcoin's blockchain must be cryptographically verified to ensure that people trying to send Bitcoin actually own the Bitcoin they're trying to send. Cryptography also applies to how groups of transactions are added to Bitcoin's blockchain. Transactions are not added one at a time, but instead in blocks that are chained together, hence the term blockchain. We will go deeper into the specifics of the process in the proof of work section that follows, but for now, here's the takeaway. Cryptography allows the computers building Bitcoin's blockchain to collaborate in an automated system of mathematical trust.